There's no reason why that couldn't be your story.
You don't have an expiration date.
Oh, I love that. This is the Authors and Agents Podcast.
Wonderful. Erica, thank you so much for joining me today and giving me the opportunity to pick your brain a little bit. So let's start off first by having you tell me about your latest release, All That Consumes Us, that came out in October.
Okay, so All That Consumes Us is a gothic, dark academia, young adult novel. It's about a first-generation college student named Tara, who is at a prestigious university in Tennessee, feeling a little lost, struggling to keep up, worrying about, you know, her building college debt. And she gets the opportunity to join this prestigious academic society called Magni Viri. The only thing is that she's taking the place of a girl who just died, quite mysteriously.
Of course.
And so she joins the society and suddenly her life starts getting better. She has kind of built-in friends, you know, she has support. And she's writing. She wants to be an author, and she's writing for the first time. But her stories are kind of coming out darker than she would have expected. And she doesn't always remember writing them, and she keeps waking up at her desk. And so she slowly starts thinking that she's being haunted and possibly even possessed by the girl whose spot she took in Magni Viri. That's kind of the jumping off point of the novel.
Oh my gosh, I love it. That's so awesome. I love all the pieces of that. So how exciting for you. So this was book number 4 to come out, right?
It was number 4.
Wow. What an accomplishment. I mean, each book I'm sure feels like an accomplishment in and of itself, right? But tell me about your journey up to this point through publishing to having, you know, book number 4 come out into the world.
Yeah. So, I started querying, I think, in 2016, so I've been at it for a while. I queried 2 books that went nowhere, which is, I think, a really common experience for a lot of authors. I wrote like a middle grade kind of fantasy, and then I wrote a young adult high fantasy, racked up like 101 rejections.
Woo-hoo!
And then my third book, Ghostwood Song, was finally the one that got me an agent. So I participated in Pitch Wars, which is a mentorship program that unfortunately no longer exists.
Yeah.
And so that kind of catapulted me into kind of a new level. And, you know, I didn't get an agent directly from that contest, but I started cold querying after Pitch Wars and got 5 agent offers, which was astonishing and very unexpected after getting, you know, rejected over and over and over again. So that was, you know, it was pretty cool to get to make a decision about who I wanted to work with. And it was a tough decision, but I ultimately went with Lauren Spieler, who was at Triada at the time. Now she's at Folio. And so Lauren and I pretty quickly went out on submission with Ghostwood Song and sold it in 3 weeks. So it was, you know, kind of an unexpected, really fast, you know, it was just like going so slow, nothing happening for the longest time, not being able to get any traction. And then everything happened really quickly all at once, which I think happens to some authors too. Like, you know, I don't think that's an uncommon experience. I published Ghostwood Song with Harper Teen. It was a 2-book deal. So my next book was The River Has Teeth with them. And it had an option clause. So then they got first dibs on, you know, looking at my next work. So then I signed another 2-book deal, which was The Restless Dark and All That Consumes Us. It was kind of a little bit of a long road. But, you know, knowing as many writers as I do and knowing that some of them have written 10 books or been querying for 10 years, you know, I feel really lucky because it is, you know, it can be an incredibly long road. Publishing is not a meritocracy. You know, it's just hard work and luck. And, you know, so I think with Ghostwood Song, I got lucky. It was just the perfect, you know, kind of ticked all the boxes at that moment in time and got interest just at the right moment in time. But I'm so grateful I wrote those first 2 books. I do always want to tell people that, you know, it was like, I don't think those first 2 books that went nowhere were a waste. Like, I won't use them. There's a chance I'll go back and salvage them for parts. But they taught me how to write a book. They taught me how to finish a book, how to revise, how to work with critique partners. They were so valuable for me. So I'm really grateful that I wrote those books. Though, of course, at the time, I definitely didn't feel that way.
Definitely. I mean, it's easier to see that looking back. But I think the more you write, the more manuscripts you write, the more you are like that, where you're like, I learned something from every single one, even if I have to shelve it or it doesn't work out, it doesn't sell, regardless, you know, you just learn from the act of writing and creating and revising. And yeah, I think that's, I mean, your journey, you know, is unique to you, but I think you're right. For a lot of writers, it takes a really long time to get to that point where you can be, you know, be offered by an agent. And then sometimes it just happens really, really quick. Everything from that point, which is, you know, wonderful that you didn't have to like sit on sub for a year or something, because I've heard from authors that that is truly terrible, just like querying can be.
Exactly. I'm sure I have that in my future. You know, it's like, that's the thing about publishing. It's just like, you know, you think, oh, once I make it to this point, everything will be smooth sailing, but that's of course not true. So I'm sure I will have plenty of points in my writing career that feel a lot like my querying years. I think that's in my future.
Yes. You've had enough luck, right? That now you're going to have some of that submission dreading.
I think so.
Well, talking about querying and looking back on your querying journey, you know, with what you know now and your experiences, what would your top tip or, you know, like rule, golden rule be for writers who are in the querying process?
Yeah. So, you know, any advice I give, I want to point out, I was querying back in the last time I queried was 2017. So I realize that probably a lot has changed in the industry since then. So, you know, take my advice in that context. But I think the query letter probably has not changed substantially in that time period. So I think my top tip would be to, one way to think about the query letter, at least the way that I thought about it, was that you have to do two things and they feel kind of opposite. You have to stand out, but you also have to put yourself in a box. Yes. By which I mean, you have to show that you can honor genre conventions, that you understand the context in which you're writing, where your book would fit on a shelf, what kind of titles are typically used for your kind of book. All of those things like word count, comp titles. So you need to understand kind of where you fit and be able to, you know, place yourself in that little box, but you also have to find a way to stand out so that you're, you know, not just a repeat of every other query letter that's in an agent's inbox. For me, the way I did that was I leaned really hard into what I felt made my book really different from anything else that was in the market at that time, which was that it was a very, very Southern book with a queer protagonist. And so I leaned in really hard to that. I really played up the voice in my query letter, and, you know, put as much atmosphere and Southern culture as I could into the query letter. And I think that worked. You know, I know my agent still uses that query letter as kind of an example of one that really worked for her. So I think it did. It was a successful query letter. But it is that balance of fitting in a box and also standing out. And that's certainly not easy to do. And I think that's why it's just helpful to, you know, have lots of eyes on your query, get friends to look at it, get people who have no idea what the book is about to look at it. Just get tons of feedback on your query, just so you know how it's reading and whether it's really standing out or not. And put the things that make you special or that make your book special. In what way is it a book that only you could write? That's what you can get into your query to make it stand out.
I like that. You know, I like your point of having people who have no idea what your book is about read the query letter, right? I've heard that before. Like, have someone who has no idea what your book is about read the query letter and then ask them, like, okay, tell me what you think this book is about. See if what you're actually writing is getting across what you're hoping to get across.
Mm-hmm, exactly.
Yeah, the query letter, man, is so difficult because you're right. You want to stand out, but you got to follow the guidelines because agents don't want you to be like too quirky with your query letter. They don't want it out of the box. They want you to follow the rules. But yeah, I think that's a good point. Find what really makes your story unique and play up those parts. Mm-hmm. Definitely. Well, talking about All That Consumes Us, which came out in October, What is something you hope readers will take away from that story?
You know, that's always such a hard question. And I never like getting this question, but I always use it. Like when I am, you know, in conversation with other writers, yeah. I always ask them this question. Like, what do you hope readers will get from your book? I think it's just such a hard question because, like, on the one hand, we just want them to enjoy the book. We want them to connect with it. We want them to be immersed in it. So that's always my first answer. And then I guess I would also say what I want for all of my books to do is to find someone where they're at. Maybe they're lonely, maybe they're struggling with something, and for them to see themselves in my characters or in the storyline. Because the truth is not every book is for every reader, right? Mm-hmm. You can't like every book you read. Every book you like can't be liked by everyone. But there are going to be people who connect really deeply with a story. And so I dedicated All That Consumes Us to those on lonely paths. So I hope that readers who are on a lonely path will connect with the story and find hope and meaning in it.
I love that. I think, you know, when I was thinking back to when I was a actual teen reading teen books, you know, like, and all that, I just, you know, like I found like friends in books, right? Like it did, it was like, okay, I feel less alone in the world because of what I'm reading right here and these characters. And I think that that is very true for most authors, that we just want our readers to like connect with the book in some way and just feel like there's a little piece of them in it too.
Absolutely. And I think writing comes from that same impulse. It comes from a kind of loneliness or a desire to connect, to reach outside yourself and connect deeply with another person. And so that's what we all hope our books are doing.
Yeah, I think you're right. So speaking about books that you like to read, who are some of your favorite authors and why do you love to read them?
So I have kind of my big all-time favorites, you know, like Daphne du Maurier, Shirley Jackson, Sarah Waters. Those are kind of my hero writers who sort of set the tone for me and something to aspire to. I will never reach their pinnacles, but, you know, to try. But then I feel like I also have those more what I would think of as peer writers who are kind of writing in the same area in the same context as me. And so, you know, Wendy Hurd is one of my favorite contemporary writers. She writes both adult and young adult mysteries and thrillers. She's brilliant. I actually use her beat sheet. She has a beat sheet on her website that I use for all of my plotting. She's brilliant. So I love her. Courtney Gold, who's someone who's writing really similar books to mine.
So good.
Her new book, Where Echoes Die, is so good. So those are two like kind of my contemporaries that I really, really like and admire and whose books I read. You know, as soon as they come out, I'm going to read them.
Oh, don't you love any of authors like that? Like instant read for me. Mm-hmm. One of them is Mary Kubica, where I'm just like, I'll read anything she writes because I know that's going to be good. I know there's going to be some twist that blows my mind and it'll be amazing.
Absolutely.
That's awesome. Thank you for sharing those. So next, could you share with me some advice for aspiring authors? You know, thinking back to yourself and, you know, your beginning writing days, what is some advice you'd give to someone who's just starting out?
So I have two very different pieces of advice. One is very practical. Take care of your body. Writing is really hard on your body. And when you're in your early 20s, which I assume a lot of your listeners probably are, you're not thinking that much about it. But writing is hard on your neck. It's hard on your back. It's hard on your hands. So if I could go back and tell myself at the beginning of writing, I would say, like, do physical therapy, exercise, take care of yourself, stretch, get up from your desk and move around. Right. Like, it's such practical advice. But, you know, I mean, you only get this one body. And if you can't sit in your desk and work, you can't write. So that's my number one piece of advice from, you know, and a slowly aging millennial writer to younger writers is, you know, just take care of your body and it will serve you well. And my second piece of advice is one I'm still trying to take. So it's advice for both listeners and for myself, which is if you can find a way to separate your writer self from your author self, that will serve you well. I love writing. I love being an author, but it is at times a grueling and dispiriting industry to work in. It'll kick you in the teeth quite a lot. And it can be really hard on your self-esteem, your sense of self. It can make you feel often like you're a huge failure, even when you are objectively not a failure. And so, you know, if you can find a way to have your writer self and your author self be separate people and to keep those things separate, because the writing is what really matters. And the writing is what will keep you moving forward if you want to pursue a career as a writer or as an author. The writing, you have to love the writing. You have to put it first above all the author stuff, the social media, you know, publicity, all the kind of extra author stuff, blurbing, all of that stuff that is extra, that is about career. It has a way of creeping into the writing and distracting you and making you doubt yourself. And so I don't have an answer about how to do this. And if anyone figures it out, please let me know. But if you can early on in your career, before you have an agent, before you have a publishing deal, start figuring out how to separate those two aspects of yourself. That will serve you well. It's something I'm still working on 4 books into my career.
Well, I think that is such great advice, but I think it is so hard because those two things can be very interconnected and just so hard to separate. I mean, as writers, mm-hmm. I feel like, and maybe this is an overgeneralization and not everyone is this way, so don't get offended, people, but you know, like, I feel like we're very, I don't know, I don't want to say emotional, but we kind of have to be when we're writing. And so I think to hear things about your work from readers and then to have to sit down and try to work, and then there's those little voices in the back of your head that's like, oh, remember this reader, this review said that, or, you know, whatnot, can be really hard to separate. So I think that is wonderful advice. I think that is definitely a good reminder, because you don't want your writer self to get downtrodden too much by your author.
Absolutely. And one of the only things that I've found personally helpful in this is just taking breaks from social media periodically, because there's something about social media that just puts you right, like, in the face of the publishing machine at all times. And all of that is in your head at all times. You know, you're getting tagged on Instagram from readers, and
yeah,
you're seeing what other people are accomplishing, and it can weigh on you. And so I find it helpful to take periodic breaks from social media. Find some quiet, find some silence, be able to get back in tune with my writer self, and their vision and what they want to accomplish. And so that's the one thing I have found helpful. I wish I had more advice for how to do it.
Yeah, right. I mean, I think it'll probably be a little bit different for each person. I think, you know, your point about social media is so right, because there's readers out there who like to tag authors in negative reviews, which we should not be doing, readers.
I'm always amazed. I'll get tagged in this completely gorgeous photo and I'm like, oh, they must have really loved the book, you know, and then I start reading. And I think, why would you tag me in this? Didn't your mama raise you right? Like, it's like knocking on someone's door to tell them their house is ugly.
No, I had a reader who sent me a message and was like, just so you know, I couldn't finish your book. So just so you know, I'm not going to finish it. And I was like, that's not something you need to tell me, right? Like, I have never thought in my reviewer, you know, like, part of my business to be like, oh, I'm not going to finish this book. I need to reach out to the author and send them an email immediately. It's just some courtesy, readers. Let's not do that.
Yeah, like, I don't mind if readers don't, like I said, yeah, not every reader can like every book. Exactly. I don't mind.
No.
I just, you know, don't necessarily need to hear about everyone.
I, you know, fully expect people not to like my work, because my book is like, I can't remember which author said this, but your book is like a cookie. And some people might not like the chocolate chip cookie that you created, and that's personal preference, and that's totally fine. But, like, don't tag me in like your example, beautiful picture, and then not like it. That is funny though that they didn't like it, but spend a lot of time creating a beautiful photo for their Instagram. So my next question is a two-parter. I'd love to know what you enjoy most about writing and what is the most challenging thing about writing for you.
Okay, so I love drafting. I know that's a divisive subject. Some people hate a blank page. I love a blank page. I love telling myself a story. So I'm very much a pantser by nature. And so I like to just tell myself a story and watch it unfold on the page. Like, that is so exciting and fun to me.
Yeah.
Of course, like, revision is so valuable, and revision is where the story comes to life and becomes what it is. So revision is really important. But for me, I enjoy drafting a lot more, especially when you kind of can get in flow and the words are just coming, you know, and you just, the story feels like it's propelling itself forward.
That's the best. Like,
that is the best feeling in the entire world. So that's definitely the best thing about writing. I think the worst thing about writing is probably just dealing with the day-to-day kind of publishing stuff that is just, you know, tricky and hard and makes you feel bad about yourself and your writing. I think, which is why I keep talking about separating your writer and author selves, because, you know, that is one of the harder parts of writing for me, is dealing with the kind of more career aspects of it.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, I love to start as a pantser because I usually get like a glimmer of the story that's usually like 75% of the way through. So then I try to write out the scenes as they come to me, because otherwise I leave myself these weird cryptic notes and then I don't understand what I was trying to go for. But I love that. I love that point when you have gotten everything going and it's like you can't stop writing and the story is just moving forward. It's so great. But I will say I start as a pantser and then I'm like, okay, I need to outline a little bit, because I've gotten myself into some serious corners as a pantser without thinking ahead.
Yes, I have as well. And, you know, my last four books have been written on deadline. Well, my last three books have been written on tight deadlines.
Right.
And so I had to plot more than I would have liked to, or would naturally have done. And I think it's made me a better writer. I've gotten more familiar with kind of, you know, beats and plot and all of that. Right. And it is something I incorporate more now. But I find that if I overplot, like if I plan too much, I just won't want to write the book. I'll get bored.
I'm the same exact way. I'm like, okay, but I know what's going to happen already, so I don't even need to write it.
Yes, exactly.
That is so funny. Okay, I'm not alone in that, at least.
Definitely not.
So if you were to genre hop, write something completely different from what you're used to writing, what genre would you like to most try?
Well, I would love to do a retelling. I don't know if that's exactly a genre, but I've always wanted to do a retelling of Jane Eyre, which is one of my favorite books of all time. So I hope eventually I'll find exactly the right idea and way to do that. I'm sort of genre hopping a little bit at the moment. I'm kind of writing like a, I guess they're calling it a romantasy now. It's like a whole new Goodreads category. But I'm kind of playing around with that a little bit. And it feels very strange and very out of my wheelhouse. So in that way, it's really good. I feel like it's really pushing me and stretching me and showing me I have a little more range than I thought as a writer. But it's definitely radically different from anything that I've written before.
Isn't that so exciting? I usually stick with like YA mysteries, thrillers, murder mysteries, or anything like witches and murder is like kind of my like brand. It was at least. And then I wrote a romance this year, like an adult contemporary romance. And it was like so different and so kind of scary, but also like freeing to be like, oh, I could literally write anything that I wanted to. It doesn't have to just be this murder mystery thing that I absolutely adore, but I could try something new.
Absolutely. Yeah, it's fun. And I think just writing something so different, and I haven't put any pressure on it at all. It's just been kind of like, I want to write something fun, a little fluffy, lighthearted, you know, just something just that's fun. And it has been. It's been it felt like a little bit of a relief to write something so outside of my brand.
I love it. I think that's great. Yeah. Your brand can be whatever you want it to be, Erica. It doesn't have to be just one thing.
That's true. That's true.
So I've just got a few questions for you left. These are, you know, kind of more fun questions. So who has been the biggest supporter of your writing?
There's so many people who have been so supportive. I think I have to say my spouse, just because I have health insurance because of him, you know?
That is very important. I do too, because of my spouse.
Exactly. You need that health insurance. But also he is a sounding board for me. Like I talk through all my plot problems with him. He reads all my books. He's read all of my books in kind of early draft stages, except for the newest one. He finally got to read a finished book of mine for the first time, which I think was kind of exciting for him. But yeah, he's so supportive, allows me to have health insurance and not have to have, you know, an extra full-time job on top of my full-time writing. So I really appreciate that. And just having someone who will, you know, I'm like, hey, do you want to go walk through a creepy cemetery? And he's like, yes, you know, that's valuable.
That's very valuable. He is along for the ride for what you need for your writing.
Absolutely.
Oh, I love it. So when you're writing, what's your favorite writing snack or drink? What do you usually have close by?
A cup of tea.
What kind of tea?
So I only drink black tea. Okay. I've usually got Scottish breakfast or Darjeeling or Irish breakfast. So I like really strong black tea that keeps me awake.
Yeah. Got to get that caffeine, huh?
Yes.
Awesome. I gotta love tea. I am headed to get myself a chai tea after this because it is
very nice.
8 a.m. my time here. So, you know, it's a little too early to run out of the house with my kids.
That is early.
So my last question for you, Erica, is easy. It sounds a little scary, but it's not. I'd love to know what your favorite book is right now. This is not your favorite book of all time. It could be one, two, or three books that you've read recently that you just really want to tell people about.
So the one book I keep wanting to tell everybody about is All the Dead Lie Down by Kiri McCauley. Have you read that?
I haven't read that.
It's sapphic horror. It's YA. It's about a girl who, after her mother dies, she gets invited to go be a nanny by this famous horror author who lives on this creepy estate on the coast of Maine.
Why would you accept that job?
She starts looking after these like kind of creepy kids. And this is the book I keep telling people that I wish I'd written it. Like it is gorgeously written. It's so beautiful. And it's so creepy. It's coastal. This is the one coastal book. If I tell you like read one of my recommended books this year, it's this one, All the Dead Lie Down by Kiri McCauley. It is so, so good.
Okay, adding it to my cart right after this because I want to see what happens because like if that was me and I was yes, I want to apply for this creepy job. No. Oh man,
I would take that job though.
Would you? I would not. I can't do creepy kid stuff, like especially after becoming a parent. Creepy kid stuff is like I can't. Like they kept showing this commercial on TV for like the two little girls who got taken and then they came back possessed. And I was like, no, I can't do creepy kid stuff anymore.
Yeah. There is something about like, I don't know, ghost children or anything where something is a little supernatural involving children. It's 10 times scarier every time. I don't even really know why, but it is terrifying stuff.
Yeah. I found that as I've gotten older, horror movies are harder for me to watch, but I love reading horror, so I think I can handle it. I think the visualization of it, like I can still see in my mind the Haunting of Hill House, like every moment of scary that was there, like so visually, that it's hard for me to watch those things now because they just like play in my brain.
I can't watch horror movies either, which people are always like, you're a horror author.
Right.
But I'm a horror author because I'm a scaredy cat. I'm afraid of everything. I write what I'm afraid of. That's why my books are scary. But yeah, this one's not like horrifyingly scary. It's like low-key scary.
It's like a good creepy level. And I love anything on a coast.
It's creepy.
Like, I love anything on the coast, or I always write mine on the Oregon coast because that's where I'm from. And there's not enough about the Oregon coast because it's stormy, it's creepy, it's rainy. I love it.
Sure, yeah.
Yeah. Well, Erica, thank you so much for chatting with me today, letting me pick your brain, sharing your journey, your advice with us. It has been so lovely to get to know you. And everybody, please go read All That Consumes Us if you haven't already. And and tag Erica in your lovingly wonderful review.
Thank you so much for having me.